Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm Vanessa Lowry and your host for today's show. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work, the book they have written, or the book that begs to be written based on their knowledge, experience, and perspective. Our regular show host, Tim Morrison, is with his family up in Ohio, and I'm grateful to be hosting here today. My co-host, Andy Lowe, is in the studio with me, and in addition to co-hosting Right Here, Right Now, he's the host of Renegade Radio. Good morning, Andy.
Vanessa, how are you this rainy morning here in Atlanta?
I'm good. It's been so nice for it to be cooler the last few days that the rain's been kind of refreshing.
Yeah, it really is nice. And, not only is it a little cooler, but the humidity seems down a little bit, too. So it's
Which is kind of shocking with rain that you would think the humidity's down. But, yeah, there you have it.
There you have it.
In August, it's nice to have a little break. So thanks for being with me today. And I am excited about our show today. We're going to be talking about promoting your book in ways that will capture the attention of the media and your target reader. My guest is Sandra Beckwith. She has experience on both sides of the book promotion fence. She conducted award-winning publicity campaigns for her own books, as well as successfully promoting books for her clients. She uses workshops and one-on-one coaching to help individuals and organizations learn how to generate their own publicity, and her website is cleverly named buildbookbuzz.com. Sandra is the author of two publicity books, Streetwise Complete Publicity Plans, How to Create Publicity That Will Spark Media Exposure and Excitement, which is a how-to guide for small business owners like freelance writers, and Publicity for Nonprofits, Generating Media Exposure That Leads to Awareness, Growth, and Contributions, a step-by-step manual for nonprofit organizations. She's also the author of Why Can't a Man Be More Like a Woman? And has ghostwritten several nonfiction books. So welcome, Sandra.
Hi, Vanessa. Hi, Andy. How are you?
It's so great to have you on the show today. I know that you and I've been in touch for several years, and I've been getting your newsletter regularly, and you have so many great things to offer to authors, both things that you've learned in promoting your own books, but also what you've learned in promoting the books for your clients. What do you think is the main thing that every author should do to successfully promote their book?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I'll give you two answers to that. The first is, and the first answer is directed to those authors who are traditionally published versus the independent authors. And for them, I would say the most important thing is to understand that your publisher isn't going to do it for you. You are going to have to do it yourself. The self-published people get this already, but those who go with traditional publishers, you know, think that, oh my gosh, they're all excited, all a buzz about what their publisher will do when their book comes out. But for most situations, about all the publisher can do is announce the book once it's available, and then they move on to their next title. So that's one thought. The second thought is that I always encourage authors to think beyond book reviews. Too many authors think that book publicity and promotion and marketing is about getting book reviews. And that's part of it, and it's an important part of it, and you don't want to skip that step. But it's not the only thing you can or should be doing for your book. So short version, think past book reviews.
And so when you're saying think past book reviews, are you talking about the traditional venues that would review books, or are you talking about like book reviews on Amazon that readers would individually post?
Both, actually. Think past those book reviews that you might get in, if it's a nonfiction book that you might get in a trade magazine that's related to your book's topic, or that you might get in a newspaper, or reviews that you might get at an online website, because there are a lot of sites now that do online book reviews. And actually, I have a blog post about how to get the attention of these reviewers, but the Amazon comments as well. And with Amazon, I think of them more as comments really than reviews, because the people who comment on Amazon aren't really book reviewers. They don't know how to review books. So I think of them as commenters, but those comments can be helpful to people who might be on the fence about purchasing a book. So you do want to get good comments on Amazon. But collectively, I'm saying think past both of those and think in terms of you know, doing guest blog postings on blogs that are read by your target audience, and make sure that you're getting exposure in your local media when your book comes out, and learn to position yourself as an expert on your book's topic, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, and get media interviews by leveraging your content expertise, things like that.
Great. Well, and I know that you've published lots of things. You've published books, you've published workbooks, ebooks, white papers, and you regularly write content for your Build Book Buzz newsletter. So I'm curious if you could describe your writing process and how you incorporate that into all the other things that you do during the day and during the week.
Oh, good question. Well, just as a little bit of background for our listening friends, I have a degree in journalism and public relations, so it's probably easier for me to incorporate writing into the process. And I am also a nonfiction writer, so part of my income comes from being a writer. I write newsletters for corporate clients. I write magazine articles. As you mentioned in the introduction, I ghostwrite books or edit books for others, that sort of thing, in addition to my work with authors, teaching them how to be their own book publicists. So, you know, writing is a big part of my work life. And, you know, guys, honestly, I love writing. So for me, the challenge isn't finding the time to write. The challenge is finding the time to do things that don't involve writing. So, but as to how I, you know, kind of incorporate it into my schedule and find time for it, deadlines make a real big difference. And if it's client work, there's a deadline automatically. So that's easy, and that is a great motivator. Because, you know, if I don't meet that deadline, you know, I don't get the check that helps pay for where I live.
Right.
you know, so that's, you know, so, you know, the check is also a very big motivator to find time to write. But, you know, for my own writing, and just, you know, as an example, you mentioned my newsletter, and then I also write on my blog twice a week, and I also just wrote an e-book called Get Your Book in the News, How to Write a Press Release that Announces Your Book. And Vanessa, that could have taken me forever because that was for me, not for a client. So there was no real deadline. So to make sure I found the time for that work that nobody really is paying me for, I gave myself a deadline. And, you know, darn it, I stuck to it. Because, you know, you have to. And, of course, you know, I was really generous with myself. I gave myself a realistic deadline. I wasn't like one of those clients, you know, who wants it done in, you know, 5 minutes when it's really going to take 5 months. So I was good to myself. I wasn't too hard on myself, but I did give myself a deadline, and I did meet it. And really, that's the trick I have found for that is, I'm deadline-oriented, so I have to give myself deadlines.
Well, and I've found, you know, with both my projects and with my clients' projects, that if I can break my deadlines down into steps and give each step a deadline, it's easier for me to do, you know, little steps and meet a deadline than it is to think, like with your ebook, to say, oh, my ebook's going to, I'm going to have it written in 6 weeks. But it's easier for me to have, I'm going to have the first chapter written in a week and the second chapter written the next week, as opposed to having one long deadline. Do you find that
Yes. That
helps you as well?
Absolutely. And you bring up such a good point. It can be, I think what stops some people from a project of that size, no matter how many pages are in the book, I think a roadblock for many is the magnitude of the project. You know, they've got that book in them that they want to write, but they're so overwhelmed by how many words it takes to create a book that they sort of freeze. And if you break it down into little steps with their own deadlines, it is much more manageable, absolutely. And, you know, you can, you know, other ways to do that is, you know, create a folder for each chapter. And initially just start dropping information in each of the chapter folders, you know, research that you have, ideas that you have, what, you know, your plot line, whatever it might be, how does it unfold? Maybe start that way. And then exactly one chapter at a time, and really think only in terms of one chapter, And then when you meet each one of those deadlines, make sure you give yourself a reward. For me, that's a real good excuse to go out and buy a gluten-free cupcake.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, and I do think, especially for our own things, we kind of forget about those rewards. So thank you for that reminder.
Yes. You know, when it's a client, the reward comes as a check.
Right.
At least for me. But when it's my own things, yeah, it's a trip to Starbucks for a tall, extra hot skinny vanilla latte, or it's some other little sugary treat.
Nice. Well, and your bio on your website says that you're a recovering publicist, and now you spend most of your time focused on teaching other people how to build their own book buzz. When does it make sense for an author to hire an outside publicist versus the things that they're going to need to do themselves?
Yes. When does it make sense? You know what? I'll tell you the short answer. And by the way, you know, for the recovering publicist, feel bad for me because there is no 12-step program for that. I had to get through that on my own. No patches, no prescriptions, nothing. That said, in terms of hiring a publicist, really the best answer I can give you, Vanessa, is when you have more money than time, then it makes sense to hire a publicist because you really do want to work with somebody who specializes in books. The only time I will tell you that you could use a general publicist rather than a book specialty publicist is when you are looking for somebody to get publicity for you in your own local market. Then hiring a local publicist who has, you know, who knows what the local media likes and knows all the program options and that sort of thing, then they don't need to know the book world. But outside of your own local market, you really will do best working with somebody who understands how to promote books. And I say more money than time because in most cases, and not all cases, and again, I have a blog post on that also on my site on what you need to know about book publicists. And one tidbit in there is that they typically charge from $3,000 to $5,000 a month and require a three-month minimum because they need that much time to build momentum, particularly if monthly magazines are on your hit list. So it's an expensive undertaking, and the people who can afford that tend not to be, the average author. They tend to be people who have a traditional publishing contract that has given them a large enough advance that they have that kind of money from their advance to hire a publicist, or they tend to be professional speakers, consultants, entrepreneurs, and well-paid corporate people who can fund that campaign from another business, and their book is a giant business card for that other business. So it's in there, you know, that book is a marketing tool for them. And they didn't create that book so that they could earn money by selling the book itself. They created that book so that it would support their professional business, whatever that might be. So those tend to be the people who can afford to pay $3,000 to $5,000 a month. And that is also why I get so many great authors taking my online, my book publicity course online, Book Publicity 101, because they know that they can't afford to hire somebody. They know doing it themselves is not rocket science, so they work with me for 4 months and I teach them how to do it. Now, there's one other time, though, that I would say it's worth hiring a publicist, and that is if you are certain, and your certainty is based on good knowledge. If you're certain that your book has the potential for the national TV talk shows, and maybe that's the Today Show or Good Morning America or the program on CBS, or maybe it's, you know, something on one of the cable networks that's very high profile, you know, Katie Couric's upcoming show, that sort of thing. If you know that you've got a book that really could that could get you onto one of these big national shows, then it makes sense to hire a publicist with a good track record with those media outlets you're targeting. And even then, there's never any guarantee. But those really high-level programs, that's harder to do yourself. It's much harder than, for example, getting local publicity. And if you've got a really good shot at it, and if you can afford to hire somebody who's got a great track record with those things, then I say go for it, because they probably could take you farther.
Well, and I think that, you know, it's interesting with technology how much more accessible so many tools have become for authors. And, you know, with a little bit of training, like the kind of training that you provide to them, you know, people can do a lot of things on their own. So I'd like for us to talk a little bit about press releases. And, you know, some of the press releases are really kind of an unknown territory for a lot of authors. So what's the best way to capture the media's attention when you're creating a press release? And then what should be included in a press release?
Well, you know, there are a couple of different types of press releases. There is one press release that every author needs because it's a document that has to go out with their review copies. And while I said, you know, earlier that you don't want to focus only on getting reviews, you do want to try to get reviews with the understanding that some books never will be reviewed. So please don't cry your heart out if you don't get any reviews, but do what you can to generate them. When you send out a review copy, it needs to go with a press release that announces your book. You know, you can call it a book announcement press release. You've got to have one of those. So that's one type, and in that particular type, you know, you need to have information that, with your first paragraph, you've got to catch the media's attention, and then as you move through the press release, you need to describe what's in the book, you know, in a journalistic way, in an accurate way. It's not an ad. You need to think of it as a news item, something similar to what you'd read in your daily newspaper. So you have to have accurate information that describes the book. You have to communicate why anybody would want to buy it. You know, what's the value? What will this book do for the reader? Whether it's a mystery or a how-to photography book, you need to say, why would the reader want to buy this? And you've got to have some information about the author and why that author is uniquely qualified to write this book. And then information on where to purchase it. And that particular, you know, I probably should take a step back, and, you know, we're talking press release, and probably, you know, a lot of our listeners, for me, that's common knowledge. I mean, I have a degree in public relations, and one of the primary tools in PR is the press release. And I have to remind myself that not everybody even knows those two words put together, you know, this press release.
Right.
So I probably need to step back and say that a press release is a written document that announces news or shares newsworthy information, and it typically goes out to the press. You know, and that can be, you know, TV, radio, newspaper, magazine. Now it goes to blogs because there are so many, you know, bloggers who share news and information, and also online media outlets as well. You know, for example, Vanessa, if I had found, you know, in my research found out about this show, I might have sent you a press release as background information if I contacted you to be a guest on the show. If I were pitching you to bring me on as a guest, I might have explained in an email why I'd be the most amazing guest in the world, and I would include with that a press release maybe about my new book, something like that, so that you would have that as background information. Just this is sort of an aside. But it's a written document that can be used as is in any journalism outlet. So it's written like a magazine article or, you know, a newspaper article, that sort of thing. So just sort of picture that, and, you know, back around the dawn of time, we used to distribute them on paper. So it was like a little article on paper, news article on paper, and now we do everything electronically. So with that said, that it's a document that announces news in a journalistic way, you need one that announces your book. But then there are other, you know, the other types of press releases. My favorite for authors is called a tip sheet. And this is such a fantastic tool for authors, and so few of them know about it, but we spend time in my course learning how to write them, and it's so much fun because, my, you know, the students who are authors, are, you know, even though it's virtual, you can see the light bulbs going off over their heads. And they're like, oh my gosh, I could write one tip sheet a month just based on my book's content and, you know, sending it out, keep sending them out for a couple years to the press. So a tip sheet is a specific type of press release that shares tips or advice in a bulleted or a numbered format. And again, I have information on that on my website under the, I've got a page on my site called tips. If you go to buildbookbuzz.com/tips, there's an article there on how to write a tip sheet. So just make a note to look that up later. And what you do is you find a problem that you can solve as the author of your book, and applies to fiction and nonfiction. You find a problem, you use your first paragraph to state that problem, and then your next paragraph is a quote from you, the expert, that identifies you as the expert by using your book title, and then you say, you know, Lowry offers the following tips for dealing with this problem, and then you list your tips or advice. And just to give you an example from the fiction world, Vanessa, let's say you write romance novels. And let's say that Valentine's Day is coming up, you know, supposedly the most romantic holiday in the U.S. of A.
Right.
So you could send out, as a romance author, I'm thinking, Vanessa, especially if you've written a couple of romance novels, you are my go-to gal for romance tips. I'm thinking, who knows romance better than somebody like Vanessa, who has written several romance novels? So you could, with great authority, I think, write and send to the press a tip sheet that tells me the 5 most romantic ways to celebrate Valentine's Day with my sweetie. Or maybe it's the 4 most unexpected ways to show my love on Valentine's Day. Or maybe it's 6 things I can do on Valentine's Day that nobody else has even thought of. Or maybe it's for those of you who are unattached on Valentine's Day, here are 4 things you can do to have a lot of fun without a partner. You know, things like that. Do you see where I'm going with this in terms of advice?
I do, and it, you know, as you were talking, it made me think that it sounds like the authors really should have multiple press releases and not only distribute them when they write them, but also keep them in a file so that when opportunities come up, they can reuse the same press release multiple times to generate additional publicity opportunities.
Exactly. So they've got that one book announcement press release, and then maybe they start to write tip sheets. And that the information from the tip sheet, by the way, can also be turned into blog postings and should also be included in the press room on their websites. And then there's even another kind, which would be a straight press release announcing news. And the kinds of things, the kind of news that authors can be announcing might be on a local basis. Maybe they send out a press release announcing a local book signing, or, you know, they've got a book launch party that the public's invited to. So you announce that with a press release because that's news. And, of course, if you're doing it with a bookstore, you would be collaborating with the community relations manager or whoever your contact is at the bookstore. If you're doing it at a non-traditional venue where books aren't typically sold, which is actually a really good idea for book launches. As a matter of fact, one of my writer friends, Irene Levine, wrote a book on friendships, about broken female friendships. Friendships running the course of time. And for her launch party, she didn't do it at a bookstore. She did it at her hair salon.
Oh, wow.
Which was, a kind of a razzle-dazzle upscale hair salon. So her hairdresser, or we'll call her her stylist, hosted a book launch party for her. And they had, you know, food and beverage and a book sale table. And, you know, Irene sold a lot of books. Partly because it wasn't in a bookstore, and it was at an unconventional venue for this sort of thing, which made it even more appealing to people. But, you know, she also sent out a press release announcing this. So there's that kind of news. You know, one way to get attention for your book is to create a holiday or a special day for your book. So if you do that, you send out a press release announcing it. Maybe you've done a survey related to your book's topic. You send out a press release announcing the survey results.
Well, and I love that idea of the holidays because I, and I know we've talked about, you talked earlier about Valentine's Day, but one of my favorite holidays is Chocolate Covered Anything Day, which happens on December the 16th. And so, you know, I think there's so many fun, odd holidays that, you know, people can easily find just with a Google search that can tie into different things that they're, that have to do with their book. I saw on Facebook today that today is National Lizard Day. That obviously doesn't have anything to do with any of the books that I've produced, but obviously there's people that write books that have something to do with lizards, and it makes me think of, you know, Martha Beck a few years ago, and one of her books talked about the little lizard on your shoulder and, you know, kind of that being a negative voice. So I think that there's all kinds of things that you, if you can expand your creativity a little bit, you find holidays that might, you know, lend themselves to a tip sheet or a problem. Or, you know, a press release that could get you on the news in a quirky kind of way.
That it, you're exactly right, and I love that example you just gave. So if you're Martha Beck and you've got that lizard on your shoulder, and by the way, I have to admit, when you said that, I kind of looked on my left shoulder there. It kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies for a minute there. I'm not a big lizard fan, you know? But so if you're Martha Beck and you've got that concept, that great concept about that little lizard on your shoulder, so then you leverage, you know, National Lizard Day by sending out a press release, or in this case, maybe a tip sheet. So on National Lizard Day, here are three things you can do to get rid of that lizard on your shoulder, you know? And so you're right. You've got to be creative. And again, all of this applies to fiction just as well as it applies to nonfiction. One of my biggest challenges working with authors is to get fiction writers to understand this, that they have these little nonfiction nuggets in their books that they need to pull out and leverage to get media and other kinds of exposure.
Right. And I know that, you know, primarily the clients that I work with are working in the nonfiction space. Occasionally I have a client that is writing fiction, but you are so generous of leting other people reuse your articles that you've got on your website. And last year, when I came out with my book, Publishing as a Marketing Strategy, you graciously allowed us to reprint your article, 12 Ways to Keep Your Nonfiction Book in the News, in our book. And so it was, you know, in the tip section of our book, we've got a number of articles in that one by you. And I love that you give people such clear ideas of how they can continually be sending out information, including like the holidays, of how to, you know, use that as a way in the tip sheets. And some of the other ideas that you include in that article of how they can keep their nonfiction book in the news. And then, again, like you were saying, fiction writers can just kind of grab onto some of those ideas as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, the goal is to keep it in the news. And it comes back to my, you know, first statement that you've got to think past book reviews, because book reviews only happen when your book is new. They don't happen, you know, a year later. And if your book is still available for purchase a year later, you should still be marketing that book and using those strategies from the, you know, 12 Ways to Keep Your Book in the News. Using those strategies will help you keep the title out there. It will help keep it in front of your target audience, and it will help keep the sales rolling in.
Well, and you've talked about, you know, we talked a little bit about having multiple press releases and having multiple ways that you're promoting your book. So I want to talk just a minute about how to distribute those press releases. It sounds like it's a good idea to start building a list of local media contacts and people that you come across that are related to media in some way. But I know that there's also a number of distribution services, some of which are free and some of which that are paid. So I wonder if you could talk about some of the advantages or disadvantages of some of those distribution services in addition to the specific contacts that you've created on your own.
Sure. Yeah, so we can think of it in terms of, let's just kind of put them in buckets. There are three buckets. One is free press release distribution services. One is paid press release distribution services. And the third is to create your own media list and send your information to that. And actually, I recommend all three. So starting with the first, the free services, here is the deal with them. They call them, you know, press release distribution services. But that's a bit of a misnomer. And I'm, you know, I'm kind of persnickety about words being a writer. So this frustrates me. But the thing is, they don't really distribute them. They house them on their website. And then, supposedly, journalists come there and find them. Now, to their credit, these free services do allow journalists to opt in to their system and to search by topics that they're interested in. And I'm sure that some journalists do use these services. No question about it. But the thing is, they don't send your press release out to journalists. It sits on their website waiting to be found. That's not a bad thing, and there's a good reason to use them and to put your press release up on their website. There are two good reasons. One is that journalists, yes, might come there and do a search and find them. So that's good. Who wants to miss out on that opportunity, especially considering it doesn't cost you anything? But the real value in using those services and using, you know, as many of them as you can is because what you want to do is include your website's URL in your press release, and then uploading your press release to their websites, as many of these free services as possible, because that URL that's in your press release then is essentially what we call a backlink to your website. Now, Google and other search engines will rank your one ranking factor that goes into how high up on the search page your website falls when people search for information that you provide on your website. One factor they take into account is the number of backlinks that point to your site. So let's say you've uploaded your book announcement press release onto five of the free sites. Well, you've just given yourself five backlinks to your website, and that's going to bump you up a little bit higher in the Google search process because, as I said, that, you know, they take these the number of backlinks you have into account. So if, let's say, I've got 25, you and I have written a book on the same topic, I've got 25 backlinks and you've got 5 backlinks, figuring that the quality of the content on our sites is similar, I'm going to show up higher in a Google search than you are because I have more backlinks. So for backlinks alone, you want to use these free services. But you're thinking that, oh, it's a press release distribution services. Yeah, backlinks are good, but don't they send it out to the press? No, they don't, and you want them to send it out to the press. So that's why you have to use the paid services. And there are a lot of them, and there are a lot of choices. And the best I can tell you, they're not always real easy to use or figure out how to use. And they've changed over the years. It used to be that you could be very specific about the media outlets that your press release went to. And now they've cut out that specificity, and you just kind of select generic categories, you know, chunks. In other words, you used to be able to say, I want to send it to this magazine, this magazine, this magazine, and that magazine. And now you just check off all the magazines in this category. So I miss the days when you could be really specific.
Well, and I know some of the paid,
how long I've been doing it.
Right. I know some of the paid sites you can also specify by a geographical area, and
yeah,
you can specify by topic. And so even if you can't particularly pick a magazine, you can narrow it down to a certain extent.
That's very true. But when you're used to being in control, you don't like it when they take your control away. But yes, you're absolutely right, and that's exactly how you use them, is by selecting geography or category or topic, that sort of thing. And again, on my blog, I have information on how to use my favorite. My favorite is PR Web. So I've got a blog post on how to use that that service in terms of they've got pricing, different pricing options, and I help, you know, people figure out which price package is the best fit for their news needs. And within that blog post, so go to buildbookbuzz.com/blog. There's a search box on the right. Just like scroll down to find the search box and type in PR Web, and you'll get in. It'll give you an option, a couple options maybe, and click on the one about, I think it's called How to Use PR Web, something like that. Within that post, I offer a couple of options on other paid press release services that I like, and one of them is Cision, C-I-S-I-O-N. But there is also a link in that post to a site that lists free press release distribution sites, and also that post on somebody else's site also explains how those services work and kind of shows you which ones are the best, and gives you links to all of or many free sites. So just through one blog post, you can learn a little bit more about PR Web, you can learn a little bit about other paid services, and you can click through to get a list of the free press release distribution sites.
Oh, that's awesome. You know,
so that covers... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I know we're getting close on time, and I wanted to jump over to another topic, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I wanted to talk just a little bit about virtual book tours, and get your thoughts on that and why that would be a beneficial thing for authors to do and how they would go about putting together a virtual book tour.
And, Vanessa, I'm going to shock you by saying I have more information about that on my blog.
I know you do, because I've seen that information, and I think it's very helpful. I think it's another thing that authors don't think about is how they could virtually get, you know, some exposure by doing a virtual book tour. So can you talk about that?
Go to my blog, search for virtual book tour, and that'll come up. And a virtual book tour is also known as an author blog tour. And this is... imagine yourself, going on a tour across the country, going to bookstores. Instead of doing that, you're doing this virtually, and instead of visiting bookstores, you're visiting blogs that reach your target audience. And that's a key point, because everybody needs to be really specific about their book's target audience. The more specific you can be with your target audience, the more successful you are going to be with your book publicity and promotion. So that's a real important point. So you need to know who is really most likely to buy your book, who is going to be most interested in buying your book. And then you find blogs that reach those people and contact them about talking to you virtually. And talking to you virtually could mean that they do a book review. And they do book reviews, but honestly, it takes people time to read a book and then write about it. So don't make that the goal of your virtual book tour. Should not be to generate book reviews. That's just one option. You can get a book review out of it. I'm doing right now for my new book, I'm doing a lot of guest blog columns, which I love doing because I'm a writer. So I pull out little topics from my book and I expand on them in 500 to 700 words. So you can propose a guest blog column from you or blog post. Q&As are real doable. The host of the blog sends you a list of questions via email, and you respond via email. Or you can do your own questions and your own answers and make it real easy for that blogger. So it's a Q&A. Sometimes we do audio interviews that then get posted on the blog as an audio interview. Sometimes they're video interviews done via Skype. So there are all different ways that you can interact with a blogger in a way that's related to your book and your book's topic. And the reason you want to do that, there are many, many reasons to do that. But two of the best are, first of all, that blog will link to a purchase page for your book. And that purchase page might be on your website. It might be on an independent bookstore site. It might be on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But that post will link right to a purchase page for your book. So people read your content, your information, and they're intrigued. They can click through right away and buy the book. It doesn't get any better than that.
So when you write a guest blog post, or when you do a Q&A that you're going to send to a blogger, are you able to send that to more than one blogger, or is that a no-no to have the same guest blog post?
That is a no-no. It is a no-no to have the same guest blog post, which makes this challenging because you have to crank out a lot of information if you're doing, you know, nothing but guest blog posts. That's why a little variety is good.
Right.
And the reason it's a no-no is that Google changed how the algorithms it uses. And I don't even know what algorithms are. I just like to say the word. But Google changed the algorithms it uses to rank websites. And now duplicate content hurts you. It used to help you. It used to just mean that those search terms, those keywords that people search for, they're finding them in multiple places, and those places all kind of point back to you. That used to be a good thing. Now Google doesn't like duplicate content, so it will hurt you. But what you can do is take that same column and just write it a different way. So you can use that same topic, like how to peel a potato. I happen to be a mashed potato fan. But you can do how to peel a potato, and you can, you know, write it five different ways and place it five different places. But but the lead has to be different, and you might want to change the language of the steps, that sort of thing. So that's a great question. Used to be great, not great anymore.
Well, and it's interesting how when technology changes, you have to kind of be flexible and keep up with it. So that's good to know. I didn't really know if it was better or not. So I'm glad that you were able to share that with us.
Yeah, that's an important question because, and this change is relatively recent. So there are probably a lot of people who are going to be surprised to hear this, and not their fault. It's really hard to keep up with everything. And this relates back also, Vanessa, to article marketing, where you write one article and you upload it to multiple article distribution sites, and then people who write newsletters and blogs then go to those sites and search for articles related to topics they cover and then, you know, use those articles on their sites or in their publications. Used to be you could, you know, place one article on many sites. Now that works against you, which is frustrating. So you have to make sure that you don't have that duplicate content. Still doable, and article marketing is still a great marketing tactic. Surprisingly enough, you can find information about that on my blog.
Well, and I love that, and I know that we're close. We've referenced your website a couple times.
Right along here.
Yeah, but can you tell our listeners again how they can come, you know, where they come to find you and you know, how they search for some of the things that we talked about?
Yes. There are three ways I can help listeners. And it all starts at www.buildbookbuzz.com. And the three ways are, at that URL, buildbookbuzz.com, right there you can sign up for my free newsletter. It comes twice a month. It has a lot of tips and information. I basically do kind of a brain dump twice a month to help you move forward in the process. So one way is to subscribe to the newsletter. At the top toolbar on that page, you'll see the word blog. Click through to the blog. Lots of different information on the blog. It's not the same information as in the newsletter. It's just another way for me to help. So subscribe to the blog on the right toolbar. There's an option where you can subscribe through email or through RSS feed. Probably not enough to just bookmark the page because if you're like me, you'll forget to go back to it. So subscribe to the blog. Third way, also on the top toolbar, you'll see tips. Click on tips, go to that. I've got, maybe 6, 7, 8 how-to articles that will, again, give you even more information about how to promote your book and how to leverage your book and it's the information in it. So three ways, subscribe to the newsletter, read and subscribe to the blog, and go to the tips and see what you can find there that's relevant to your situation.
Well, Sandra, thank you so much. It's hard to believe that we're already on our clock's already on us.
So. I know. I want to keep talking.
I know. Andy, do you have any last questions for Sandra?
Well, I was going to say, here's the good news, Sandra. I actually control the clock, so I can decide if we run a minute or two over. So with that in mind, before you go, we've talked a lot about do's today. One thing I'd like to ask a question on before we go is a couple of don'ts. Are there some things that, you know, when we think about the limitations you were talking about getting a publicist, if you have a lot of money and not much time, I think your average author probably struggles with having time and having money. So
yes,
with those limitations, what are some don'ts that they should be on the lookout for, both with spending time they don't have and spending money they don't have?
Oh, what a great question. Okay, don't. Time and money. Don't do something just because every other author you know is doing it. There's this tendency to follow kind of the flavor of the month. You know, everybody feels like they should be on Twitter. Well, maybe not. If your target audience doesn't use Twitter, don't be on Twitter. It's not going to help you. So don't do it just because everybody else is doing it. Figure out who is most likely to buy your book, learn where they are, and focus your energy on figuring out, you know, how to get your book title in front of them where they are. And maybe it's on Facebook, maybe it's on LinkedIn, maybe they're big blog users, maybe they're newspaper readers. Figure out how they get news and information and get in front of them without worrying about what others are doing. Now, in terms of money, I think one of the biggest mistakes I see authors make in terms of spending money, two things. One is they automatically jump on advertising. Advertising costs money. Exhaust all your free options, like publicity and promotion, before you spend money on advertising. That's just kind of my personal thing. Do the free stuff before you spend money. The second thing is a lot of self-published authors buy very expensive promotion packages from the publishing houses that publish their books. Think twice before you buy those expensive packages. Talk to some authors that have used them to get a sense of what the results were, because in many cases there are more affordable options. Sometimes you're overbuying, you're paying for services that aren't really a good fit for your book, and you're disappointed. So get smart about what tactics and techniques are the best fit for your book, and then if you need to spend a little money, focus in on those specific tactics versus a big package that's kind of one size fits all. Because the one rule about book marketing is that it's not one size fits all. What works for your book might not be appropriate for my book.
Sandra, thank you so much. You know, it's been a great show, and I told several of my clients that you were going to be on the show, and they all said, oh, we're going to have to be sure and listen to that. So
I know
that the things you've talked about are really, you know, key points for a lot of authors. So I appreciate you coming on and being part of the show today.
Thank you so much for including me. I really enjoyed it.
You're welcome. And for our listeners, we welcome your comments and your suggestions about content and about our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or would like to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. And thank you, Andy, for co-hosting and producing our show today.
You're very welcome, Vanessa.
And thanks again to Sandra Beckwith of Build Book Buzz. Sandra, please share your contact information one more time with our listeners.
Yes, it's buildbookbuzz.com. And if you'd like to email questions, that's sb@buildbookbuzz.com. That's S as in Sam, B as in boy, @buildbookbuzz.com.
Excellent. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week. Tell your friends about the show. In fact, how about sending them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to download some of our previous shows? Listen to Right Here, Right Now live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. at rightherewrightnow.businessradiox.com or download the MP3 version of all of our interviews on the Right Here, Right Now website. I'm guest host Vanessa Lowry. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.